Accession number 27805, Mr. Peter Laker, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about a sort of typical East Coast convoy. We're going from north to south, and you had problems with the early radar, and you were just going into the next point where the captain asks, and I think you're going to be asked to be a lookout. Tell us what happened and what it was like.
Well, we, as Damon, of course, never had what I'm going to call sea wearing stuff, such as a duffel coat and things of that nature, or Macintoshes. And the captain wanted to have a lookout in the crow's nest. So I and the steward from the officer's mess, and I believe the sick berth attendant, and also I believe the cook, were ordered to do half an hour each in this crow's nest. Well, if I can give you an indication, you had to climb up a rope, well, a steel ladder, I suppose, in some ways, to the crow's nest, and you had to go beyond the crow's nest to enable the chappie in there to get out and go down. It was not very pleasant, believe you me. And I put on my overcoat to go up to the crow's nest, and of course it was very cumbersome, and I was very, very pleased I didn't have to do it again after that trip.
Did you see anything while you were up there?
Not a thing.
Did you know how to, I mean, was there a method of, I mean, it's a lot of sea and sky,
yeah,
and it could come from anywhere, I presume.
Well,
did you know
true.
What to do?
Well, we were told, of course, we were on a forward lookout. We weren't worried about the back, more the front of the ship, so that we were looking, I suppose, 180 degrees with a pair of binoculars, which again, of course, going up the ladder were rather cumbersome.
Now, the two main areas of risk, one by night and one by day, which I don't know which you want to deal with first. Daytime, what was the risk during the day?
Well, during the day, of course, you were always subject to dive bombers from the German mainland and, of course, Europe. It wasn't very pleasant, and they would suddenly come upon you.
Were they Stukas, or were they just dive bombers? You didn't remember?
Well, I think many of them were Stukas, I'm not sure, but Hindcourt was another one.
And what was it like in a German... People don't know now, they can't imagine. What was it like when a German dive bomb attack came on your...
It was very frightening, but the only thing I would say about it is invariably they weren't aiming at us as a destroyer. They were aiming at the merchant ships. And in that respect, we were very fortunate. But, of course, we had four guns, which were high-angle guns, so we could put up quite a barrage, and we had about four... small arms, Oerlikons of that size, and we could fire those as well, which didn't make it very pleasant for the Germans, I assure you.
Did you hit any of them, or would you know?
I cannot remember, but I don't think we ever hit a German aeroplane.
And did they hit their targets? I mean, did they sink many ships?
No, not very many. The main thing was they were near misses, and quite often the amount of stuff they threw down in respect of bombs and so forth did little damage.
Now, the other risk was at night. Did you have bomber attacks at night, or was it just E-boats?
No, we never, I can recall, ever had attacks at night by aeroplane, but we did have the E-boats, which were much larger than our motor torpedo boats, and they used to tie up to the buoys in the what was called the swept channels, and they used to tie up there and wait for us coming down. And of course, as I said before, radar was in its infancy, and it wasn't at that time so easy to pick out this boy being larger than normal. And so as soon as we got parallel to them, then they used to switch on their engines and attack and cause quite a lot of confusion. And of course, we had to be very careful that we were firing, if I may say so, blind, and we didn't want to hit any of the merchant ships in so doing.
And did they would they also concentrate on the merchant ships?
Well, when we got down to Harwich, we used to have an assistance from the Harwich Patrol, who used to come out, destroyers and motor torpedo boats and so forth, and lie on alongside the outer column near the North Sea, so to speak, and help protect us. So we did have some help at that time.
Another risk was, were you aware of it, the risk from either minesweepers or mines, rather, or submarines?
Well, mainly mines. I don't ever recall any attack by a submarine, because I think we had these minefields out in the North Sea, which made it a bit difficult for submarines to get close in. But I do remember that we used to quite often have floating mines. And of course, at one time we got these magnetic mines, which were a terrible instrument at that time. But fortunately, they got degaussing on ships pretty quickly, and that counteracted.
Now, once you got past Flamborough Head, it says you'd be at action stations all the time. So
yes.
Initially you'd be, you know, in the ammunition party, and then later on the... what was it like? So, well, I think you were on the Ehrlichan Moor, weren't you?
Yeah.
What was it like being on action stations for 2 days? How did you manage? I mean...
Well, you did in fact stay at your station. Obviously, you reported when you wanted to go below to relieve yourself, as you had to. I mean, you couldn't stay on top all the time, but you could only let, in my case, one go down for, you know, to go to the toilet. But we used to sit on the deck and go to sleep, if I may use that expression, for perhaps half an hour or something like that, whilst it was quiet. I mean, if anything happened, then you were soon wide awake, believe you me.
And what about, I mean, you're just there for 2 days. What about food?
Well, the galley used to provide us with tea or coffee or chocolate, and also sandwiches, usually corned beef sandwiches. And we used to have that. And, of course, when we got in the harbour, we made up for the lack of food then.
Before that, I should have asked before, what about the food system generally? I mean, was it a canteen? What sort of ships is, what's the food system?
Well, we used to have a canteen messing on board.
Can you explain canteen messing? Well, how did it work? You'd have this for the first couple of days before you got to Flamborough Head.
That's right. Well, we used to take on board meat, which was kept on the upper deck in a cabinet.
No fridges, then?
No fridges at all. And that would last us for about 2, maybe 3 days. So we weren't too bad on the East Coast convoys for meat. And we used to have potatoes as well and veg. And that would last us perhaps also for 3 days. So we weren't too badly off there. But in the mess itself, you see, you went to the beef screen, as it was called, told them what you wanted by way of meat, and they would give it to you, and that would be put down as a charge for you, your mess.
Now, your mess would be the day men.
That's
mess.
Right.
So
yes,
20 of you or whatever it was.
22 of us. Yes, and we were then able to go to the Vitling supply assistant and get other things that we wanted. Also to the NAFI to buy things as well for the mess. But we've got 1 and 10 pence halfpenny a day for each person on board in your mess. And whilst that person was on, that's the amount of money you got to feed him.
Now, who did the preparation and the cooking then?
Well, the mess was run by a leading hand, and he organised the members of the mess into what was called the cook routine. So you were cooked for a week, and during that week you were responsible for A, doing the menu, B, to getting in the stores, C, to preparing it all, and taking it to the galley for cooking.
So that means if you had a stew, you would chop up the vegetables, the meat, and put them in it and put the crust on or whatever.
Yes, indeed.
Now,
yes.
How did you manage that? Could you cook at all?
Well, my mother was, I must say, very sensible in that she made me learn how to cook before I ever was knee-high to a grasshopper, so to speak. And, of course, also I did learn, to a certain extent, being in the Boys' Brigade, of what was expected. So when I went to sea, it wasn't a problem for me.
Now, any particular meals you specialised in, or was it just...
Well, I used to brag that I could do the best suet duff, plum puff, in the mess. And that used to be my speciality. So during my week as cook, I very often did a couple of these, which usually went down quite well.
And what sort of meals would you have? I mean, was it mainly stews or pies, or what sort of thing was it?
No, we used to have, for example, pork chops or suet puddings with beef and kidney, and things of that nature.
Any sort of pudding, I mean sweet puddings, or was it just a main meal?
Well, we used to have a main meal and then a dessert always at lunchtime, not so often at night. We used to just have meal at night.
It sounds like the food was quite good, I mean, if your mess was quite good.
Well, that was it. It depended on the cooks how good your food was. But
so you'd hand it over to the cook. Do you mean the cook of the day, or do you mean the cooks that actually cooked it?
Cooks actually cooked it.
Because they just heat it. You gave it to them, then they'd cook it and give it back. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. We had to get it up there depending on the time they said. For example, by 11 o'clock, if you had, for example, a roast, you had to be there by 11 o'clock with it.
So that's what you do, and then you collected it and doled it out.
That's right, yes. And washed up and cleaned up afterwards.
And the food was good?
Well, it was quite reasonable, I think. I enjoyed most of it. There were occasions when there was, shall we say, a faux pas, but they were few and far between.
And this, of course, none of this happened when you were at action stations. It was just bully beef sandwiches or whatever.
That's right.
Now, just a couple of other things. Did they have this thing called Kai? We might call it cocoa. I think it's different, though. I mean, was that a big thing on the ship?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Could you explain what Kai is, or cocoa?
Well, the Navy had blocks of chocolate, large blocks of chocolate, which had to be scraped to go into liquid form, so to speak. Sorry.
All right.
And... used to use a tin of condensed milk with it, and that used to go, and quite often someone would be very generous and put a rum tot in it as well, and that was very tasty. So you needed it at night particularly.
It was good for warming you up.
Oh, definitely, yeah, it was very warming.
Now, would you be too young for the rum ration on you?
I was at that time, yes.
And we'll talk about that later then. Yeah. So there you are. You're going down so we'll go back into the sort of more routine things. You're at action stations, and you're getting nearer to London. And yeah. Is the risk greater and greater from Flamborough Head to the Thames? Is that where the trouble is?
That's where the trouble is likely to be.
Do you remember any particular incidents, or was it just... Because I can see you say you rarely got there without having to fire your guns in anger, yeah. But are there any particular incidents you remember?
Not really. I think it was more routine from our point of view that we got used to that sort of system, and we used to take it for granted, really.
I wanted to ask about, you know, you were a young lad, about your nerves, whether you were nervous, scared, or whether you weren't. I mean, how did you feel in yourself?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember that I was scared at any time. I think I always took the line that couldn't happen to me. Silly, but there you are.
So your nerves didn't get worse or better?
No.
Now, what would happen when you got to the Thames, then?
Well, we used to go to Sheerness. That was our sort of side base. And there was always an oiler there, and the destroyers used to tie up either side and oil. And then on a few occasions, we got sent upstream to Tilbury, where we tied up to what was called the boys fore and aft. We used to turn round, actually, so that we were ready to steam out of the Thames if necessary. And there, they used to put an ammunition barge alongside us. And we were on call, so to speak, for the London barrage. So if the siren sounded, we had to turn up for action stations. The guns, that was. Quite often, people like me weren't required. But sometimes we were.
So what was it like being part of the London barrage then? I mean,
well, it wasn't very nice, believe you me. We were sometimes a bit apprehensive about it because we had this blooming barge alongside, ammunition barge alongside, which was, if it had got hit, well, I need say no more. I wouldn't have been able to anyway.
So that was at Tilbury Docks that would happen. When you were at Sheerness, you wouldn't be part of the barrage,
no,
I presume.
No.
Now, anything else happened at Tilbury or Sheerness?
Well, we did on a couple of occasions go over and stay over the South End side, and I went into South End a couple of times. That was very interesting.
What
with
that?
A long pier. I never seen a pier quite as long as that. They had a train which used to take us from the end of the pier to the land side, so to speak.
Even longer than your Brighton piers.
Oh, very much so, very much so.
Was it still a holiday resort? Was it open at all, or was it just a military naval town?
Well, it was. Well, South End. South End was empty. It really wasn't occupied, or didn't seem to be occupied. I think if I can use the word, it seemed to have closed down for the war.
Now, how long would you be in the Thames estuary, either side, before you went back on the next northbound? That was a southbound.
Well, usually on the following morning. So we would arrive, say, somewhere about 12, maybe a bit later, and oil and so forth. And then we would be allowed ashore perhaps for until 11 o'clock at night or whatever time the officer decided. And then the next morning we would be on our way back.
And was it the same only in reverse? I mean, would you have a lot of tension up to Flamborough Head? And then
yes, indeed. Oh, yes, very much so.
Just as much trouble going
yes.
that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most of us, I must say, were very pleased when we got into Sheerness or Southend and got a night's sleep. And then we knew that we got the same routine going back over, so our sleep wasn't doing the trip back any better than that coming south.
Now, what would you do when you got to Rosyth? I mean, that's where you were based. Were you allowed ashore? What would happen when you were in Rosyth, in between? I don't know how long they'd be in between.
Well, probably about 3 days. That would be the maximum.
And what would you do when you were in Rosyth?
Well, the ship would have to restore, of course, particularly in regard to victuals, and I would have to get in the stores that I wanted or had been asked for from the naval stores in the dockyard, such as I said, paint was a predominant factor, and the cotton waste, which the stokers used to use in a lot.
Now, you weren't responsible for ammunition, were you?
No, that was not mine.
So you were just the naval stores?
Yes.
So you'd replenish the naval stores. Would this be? I was wondering about paint while you're actually on a trip. They wouldn't be painting ship when you're on East Coast convoy, would you?
Well, yes. The funnel, if for example the one of the boiler rooms was closed down, then they would be painting possibly the funnel or the superstructure. But obviously, of course, not over the side. Although I can remember an example of that, and this is quite an interesting one, really. The King George VI was in Leith, and he was coming across to Rosyth to review the dockyard. And on this occasion, we were coming up the 4th, and we were told that our starboard side had to be painted to show it was, you know, good, clean paint, so to speak. And we had men over the side, which was very dangerous at you know, going up the fourth. And when we got in, all the parts of the ship that he could see on the starboard side and the front of the ship, the forward, had to be painted. And we did that. And eventually, we were told we had to man the side and raise our caps and cheer as the king went by in his barge. And I do remember thinking at that time when I saw him go past, he couldn't have cared less what sort of ship's appearance was at all. But I believe you may, we weren't very pleased about that.
Do you paint ship a lot? I mean, was it sensible, do you think, or was it just silly?
Well, I think it was two reasons. One was it was good camouflage. That was obviously important.
It was grey, was it?
No, it was white and blue and green.
You were camouflage colours?
Yes, indeed. But equally on the other side of the thing, it was to give the men something to do.
Now, anything else you'd do while you were at Rosyth? Would you get ashore much?
Well, yes, I used to go ashore quite often. I used to like to go to Edinburgh and to Dunfermline. And when I went to Dunfermline, I can't remember the chap's name, but someone who was very famous in Dunfermline, who had given the charitable status to a lot of organisations. And we used to go to the swimming baths and get a bath, because, you know, we'd had no bath for a week, you know, we were away, and you used to go for a bath and then go and get a meal.
Is this Carnoustie?
I can't remember. It could have been, yes.
So Dunfermline was one good place.
Yeah, and Edinburgh was another good
what
one.
What did
of
you
course.
Do in Edinburgh?
Well, Prince's Street used to be the obvious place to go, from our point of view, because it was always something going on, and always the restaurants there were very good.
Did they treat you well? Yeah. How did you get on with the Scottish civilians?
They were all very kind. They were very... Well, I don't remember ever having problems with them.
When you say they're kind, how?
Well, in the sense that they respected us and treated us as someone... I suppose, I don't want to use the word important, but treated us as people, you know. Didn't look down on us or look up to us. They treated us one of them.
Did they invite you into their homes? You know this business? Or
No, I don't ever remember going into a home.
And buy you pints or...
No, I don't remember that. But
so it was just they were civil and respectful?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
How were you getting on with your other messmates, you know, and the lads on the gun? I mean, the other ratings, how are you getting on with them?
Well, I was getting on all right. I think it was, in many ways, a happy ship. That led from the captain downwards. He wasn't a pompous individual. When I first went aboard, I liked the first captain we had.
Remember his name? Or?
I can't remember, no. I've got it upstairs.
What kind of an officer was he then?
He was called... a lieutenant commander, and he came off the Somali. He was first lieutenant aboard the Somali.
And what was he? What made him a good officer?
Well, the fact that he kept to himself, and he didn't shout and swear at everybody. He was calm most of the time that things were going on, although obviously there were panic stations at times. But in general sense, he sort of put a calm atmosphere on things and kept us, shall we say, sane.
What about the other officers?
They weren't a bad crowd either, really, from what I can remember. They were quite reasonable. I think it was only after that lieutenant commander went, we had a lieutenant Halifax came aboard, and he was an absolute pig. Pardon the expression.
You know what? Well, this is the naval. I mean, that's what they call the officers sometimes. Yeah. Why was he? What was so wrong
with
him?
Well, he would push people aside. If he was coming along the upper deck, he would, you know, I am the captain, I take precedence, whereas the other skipper would sort of, you know, say, good morning, Laker, or good afternoon, Laker, or things like that. But Halifax would push you aside without any hesitation whatsoever.
Did that change the morale on the ship?
It did, to a large extent. Fortunately, we didn't have him for very long, and that we were all very, very pleased when he went. I remember when the first captain went, we all stood on the side and cheered when he went, and applauded him. But when Halifax went, no one bothered to go on the upper deck at all.
What was the third commanding officer like?
Well, he was a young lieutenant, another lieutenant. He was quite reasonable. He was obviously very nervous, being his first command, and probably, from that point of view, didn't want to show his authority too much, you know, make a nuisance of himself. So he was more civilized.
What about the petty officers and leading seamen, the Killicks? What were they like?
They were all right. I never had any problems with any of them.
And what about the ordinary lads? You said you didn't make a lot of friends in, say, Royal Arthur.
Yeah.
How did you do on board ship? Did you make friends? How did you get on with the other ratings?
Well, I didn't associate, because I think, I had about two friends on there. We used to go chore together. But apart from that, I didn't used to go, because I think being a separate individual in the sense of supply assistant, I didn't have any other supply assistants on board to associate with.
So you were sort of slightly unusual. What was it about the two? Why did you pick them out to be chosen?
Well, I think it just happened. It was one of those things. A chap called, I can't remember his name now, but he came from the Isle of Wight, and I called him Lofty, and he was a Killick. And we used to go ashore quite often together. But I used to enjoy going ashore on my own, and particularly from the point of view of having, as I say, a bath, and also having some food.
Now, so anything else happening during this time? I mean, I don't know how long you were doing this for. You joined the ship, would it be November or December?
Think it must have been about the beginning of December when eventually I got aboard. End of November, December anyway.
Now, how long were you on this East Coast routine?
Well, there is another incident which happened when we were going south and we were off Sunderland, and the ship hit a mine during the night. And whether they called their hands to action stations, I don't know. But having hit this mine, it flooded the forward boiler room. And no one was injured or killed, which was quite amazing. But anyway, I knew nothing at all about this until next morning when I came up from my sleeping berth in the naval stores, which I have a camp bed down there.